this particular meditation, it centers on something called vipassana, which is wisdom or insight, if you like. And it's a meditation that I find really powerful, so I thought I'd bring this one in today. And actually, what I'd like you to do is contemplate what your basic values are that drive you. Because when we think about our basic views, they can tell us a great deal about the way we think and the way we view things and the way we view the world, actually. You know, in the last few weeks, we've been exploring how these different mental states actually colour the world and give us a different perspective. So this is kind of driving through what this is. There's a little exercise that we can just do now, a little two-minute contemplation, and it's quite an interesting one. I'm going to ask you a question, and I just want to let you sink it in and see what pops up, okay? And the question is this: what do I believe the purpose of life is? Okay. Just contemplate that for a minute. Just a couple of minutes. There's no right or wrong answers. I'm not going to even ask you what your answer is. Just contemplate that for a minute. Purpose of life. Nailed it. Got it sorted. It's an interesting question, isn't it? Because you're coming at it from all sorts of angles, you know. What's the purpose of my life or life in general, you know? What's the purpose? It's a good question. It cuts basically to the heart of spirituality. And therefore, it's actually an excellent question to examine what drives us. And it's then interesting to not look at what the answer is that we've come up with, but what drives the answer. Actually, you know, what our values are, what it is that's influencing our answer to that question. And take a kind of dispassionate look at that. I think it's quite an interesting one, because in this day and age, certainly in the West here, we've reached a point where common values that we used to have in our societies are kind of being disintegrated. You know, roll the clock back 200 years, and generally we were all driven by common values. Christianity was a big one, actually, and that was what drove our answer to that question. But in this day and age, actually, it's a real sort of melting pot of views in terms of spirituality. So in many ways, our opportunity is much wider to explore a question like this. We're not being pushed by the general society into a particular value or belief. There is one common value, however, in the West that is becoming very to the fore, and that's materialism, actually. Money. We live in a society very materialistic, so we can look and see how that affects our answer to that question, just out of interest. So the answer to the question, complete spectrum, many different approaches and views to draw on. And we can really analyse the drivers inside of us. And we have to do that with pure honesty. So really looking outside of ourselves and seeing what our influences are to that particular answer that we come up with. And we can look at the views and actually then see what's coming out and consider whether actually they do make reasoned sense, and what also the likely consequences of our views could be. So real self-honesty time here. So we not only examine our views, we examine our reactions to those views, see how we feel about them. In all honesty, we look at them and see whether they're actually our views or they've been kind of installed in us by society in some way, shape or form. And one good thing to look at when we look at a particular view is actually, does it tie us down? Does it limit us spiritually in some way, shape or form? Or does it do the other thing? Does it give us an opportunity to open and grow? So these are healthy questions to ask when we consider the answers to these questions. The Buddha said, who is your enemy? Mind is your enemy. Who is your friend? Mind is your friend. Learn the ways of the mind, tend the mind with care. So we have very much a storytelling mind, which can mislead us. It can mislead us as easily as another person. And actually, once we learn this, we learn to not necessarily trust everything our mind tells us. Even these heartfelt views that contribute to the answer to that question, we look at and go, hang on a minute, do I entirely trust that? It's a very, very powerful thing to do. And actually, as we get older, this mind machine gets even more complex. More stuff comes in, it gets populated with more and more stories that tell us more and more complex and subtle arguments and beliefs. So that question again, what do I believe the purpose of life is? Roll yourself back to when you were 6 or 7. What do you think the answer to that question would have been then? Yeah. Just put yourself in your 6 or 7 year old shoes and just think for a minute how you'd have answered that question back then. So probably feels a little different and a little more perhaps honest as well, actually, because as we get older and life contributes, many conflicting things come into play, and we find ourselves saying, what should my answer to that question be, rather than actually what is it? So it's important to think things through logically, but actually there are some questions which are better answered with pure awareness and pure intuition. And that's the difference between what we would see in the West as logical wisdom or acquired wisdom and actually what we mean by vipassana or Buddhist wisdom. So Buddhist wisdom is more akin to intuition and awareness, direct experience rather than logic. I mean, I'm not decrying learning, I'm not decrying the ability to think reasoned arguments and so on, they're important. But if we're really going to get in touch with stuff here, we're talking about base, pure awareness and intuition and removing some of these layers of the onion. So my advice actually here is to use meditation. It can really help when we're faced with a question that's quite as difficult as what is the purpose of life, rather than trying to answer it with logic, we answer it with intuition. And of course, the bit of the mind that we're getting in touch with here is the subconscious mind. And we've talked about this before. The subconscious mind is like the iceberg. It's the big bit sitting under the water. So we have to work hard to not let the conscious mind get in the way here. So we want to really unveil and reveal to ourselves what the subconscious tells us. The more we practice, the easier it gets. So actually in Buddhist psychology, we have another list. It's only a list of two. Described in the Abhidharma, we see two parts to the unconscious mind. There's the individual unconscious and the universal unconscious. And with mindfulness, we access and tap into both of these. Now, our individual unconscious, this is where we contain our deep store of our beliefs, our habits, fears, all that jazz. The stuff that pertains to I and me, and it very much supports this ego, this sense of self. And as our lives go through, this becomes more and more complex and intertwined. The universal conscious is a fascinating area. And at first it sounds rather mystical and somehow esoteric. And you all know me, in my practice is very grounded, so I actually rebel against things that are vaguely mystical or esoteric. However, actually practicing with this I find fascinating, intriguing. And actually, if you think about it, we've talked about our physical bodies in the past. When we've talked about the six element practice, we can very easily think about, yeah, the dust inside of me is not that different to the dust out on the road. I'm made of the same stuff. Actually, those trees are carbon-based. I'm carbon-based. The water falls from the sky. I drink it. It becomes me. We can get to grips with that stuff. So why should we therefore dismiss the idea that if physically I can be connected in this way, why can't I also be connected through the subconscious mind? You know, where are the barriers? What's to say there's a barrier between me and everything else that's out there? And actually what we do is we try and find that barrier. Is it truly there? It's very difficult because by definition the subconscious, we're not consciously aware of it. But what we do is we start to look at the influences in our thinking, in our lives, that actually can come from elsewhere. So if you think about you yourself as a character and you contemplate your parents, we can all find aspects of our parents deep in our psyche. You know, I could definitely find examples of habits that are driven from my mother and my father. I can almost feel them thinking. But there are huge aspects of what I do and the way I think that haven't come from them. There are things outside of those. Where have those come from? And by starting to notice that stuff, we start to tap in to that other side of our subconscious mind, the universal. And when we get in touch with that, it's huge. It's vast, actually. Things will come up that make absolutely no sense to us. We've all got experience of this in our dreams. When we wake up in the morning and we have a dream. Oh gosh, that's noisy. When we wake up in the morning and have a dream, you know, and it's just come from nowhere, and you think, where did that emerge from? Well, it's very much the subconscious that's driving that. So we don't push these experiences away, we look at them. And this has taught me a lot in my meditation, because I did used to push it away. I think, oh, that's just a trick of the mind. but when you start to open up to that experience and listen to it, you start to break those boundaries. And this is what I mean by breaking out the shell. The shell is very much constricting us. We've got to step outside of it. So the way to approach this is to look at the way the mind behaves. And I guess a good analogy is if you have a friend who never lets you get a word in, a bit like me at the moment, gabbling on. And even to the point where you try and contribute and say something before you've even finished a sentence, they're off again and they're talking all over you. The individual subconscious is like this. You know, that's the bit that kicks in. And what we have to do is focus on the answers that are coming up from the universal subconscious and look at what's contributing from there. So the meditation, Vipassana, actually we've done it lots of times already. It's the detailed body scan. What we do is we go through, but this time in great detail, we sit down on the cushion. And I won't be leading you through the body this time. You can follow whatever route you want to take. But Vipassana meditation does take you in deep. When I've experienced some of my most deep meditations with the jhanic states, it's generally been Vipassana. The jhanic states are these lovely, blissful, concentrated states that we land in. And it's generally been Vipassana that has led to them. So practically what we do is we go through the body and you literally start at your toe or start at the top of your head and you stay in each bit of the body for a short period of time and you feel and concentrate and experience as much as you possibly can. So you flow through the body and there's certain areas where it's very difficult. You know, I find the top of my arm difficult to find much going on there. But if you really concentrate, you can pick up sensations. And of course, you go inside as well. You can go inside the heart and the gut and feel your emotions and see what's going on. You can go inside the muscles and the bones. So really, really concentrate. It's a vehicle. It's a vehicle to take us in deep. And while we're there, what I'll be doing is just dropping in the odd question. Don't try and answer the odd question, just stay with the meditation and let the subconscious mind trigger and see what happens. And that's what we're going to do. Okay. Happy with that? Okay, so settling down. Relaxing into our posture, just getting comfortable. And tune into the space around you, feeling the space, awareness. Hearing sounds near and far. An awareness of friends sitting in the room supporting us in our meditation. Take a couple of nice deep breaths and just relax into the posture. Let's start with our little Buddhist mantra. Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dhammaya, Namo Sanghaya, Namo Nama, Hung. And settling down in your own mind, in your own time, at your own pace. Work through the body, feel everything. Let thoughts go. When you get distracted, just bring yourself back to wherever you were in the body. Feeling all the sensations. Letting go into it. Relaxed, friendly, gentle observance of all the sensations you find. noticing when the mind pulls you away, bringing yourself back to the body. Gentle noticing. Letting go of everything outside, just go into the body. as you gently travel through, let your awareness consider, what is it like behind, beneath my mind? What do I find? What is it that pulls you away? What is it that brings you back? As you travel through with pure awareness, who is aware? What is aware? notice any difficulty or discomfort that you encounter, anything that blocks you, gets in the way. And instead of pushing it out or away, gently explore it with your awareness. Go into the discomfort, go into the blockage, and look at it. Just experience it. Now let yourself open up to all these sensations in the body all together. Let yourself expand into it. Feel it and experience it. Representing that shell that you can look beyond and break out of. The mind is bigger than that shell. Experience the boundaries you find and go into them. What is life's purpose? When we consider that question, we consider it outside of ourselves. How different is the answer? Relaxing our concentration. We bring our mind, our awareness back into the room, feeling others sitting with us. And we offer ourselves a resolution to take this expanded sense of the world around us. A resolution to look outside of ourselves, at least for one day, more than inside. Connecting, breaking down that shell. Like ripples in a pond, we make a difference. Om Mani Padme Hum. And when you're ready, open your eyes and bring your meditation to an end.